Dave Moore on Today FM.
I don't know whether I want to talk to you or not, though, because I've just realized over the last little while that you're not just from Liverpool, but you're a massive Liverpool fan, which as a Man United fan is difficult for me to kind of park. You know, I can't really get past it sometimes.
You know what? We haven't been chatting long, but I thought I could smell something.
That's me.
I mean, listen, it's been joyful as a Liverpool fan the last few years watching the turmoil of Man United trying to achieve the lofty heights
of top four
previous years. but at the minute,
yeah. Well, I suppose right now is a good time for me to be talking to you, I guess.
We're behind you, so I can't really say anything.
But it is, look, honestly, it is a very important thing to you, isn't it? Like, you are a massive Liverpool fan.
It's, you know what, it's just something you're born into and something you grow up with, isn't it? And the older you get, I think that, you know, it never leaves you, but the more focused on your own club you become.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to ask me now who plays right back for Aston Villa, I wouldn't have a clue. If you'd have... Whereas in the past, I probably could have told you, like, the back four for every team in the Premier League.
I was the same. And it was probably fantasy football that did it for me. That you'd be constantly going, oh, yeah, that guy, as you said, like, you know, he's
the older you get, the less you care about all of it, except your own team.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. So it's, so a huge Liverpool fan, but finding less time in later life for all the other peripheral games that are going around.
You did meet Steven Gerrard, didn't you?
I did. So yeah. A few years ago, when we, Channel 4 had the England game, and yeah. I had a show out on Channel 4, and it was on after the game, and I was up there to do a little promo for it, and Steven Gerrard was doing the punditry, and he came over to me, and I was like, okay, play it cool,
don't
act like an idiot, yeah. He came over and he goes, all right, Chris, nice to meet you, Steven Gerrard, and he shook my hand, and I shook his hand, and I went, all right, Steven, yeah, nice to meet you, and I so underplayed it
that
I came across like I didn't care, like, I walked away going, I acted like he was the last person I'd ever want to speak to. I went way too far the other way.
Because I did the opposite, right? So Chris, I've interviewed everybody you can think of. I don't really get starstruck by anything because I've just had so many things over the last 25 years of interviewing people. But Gary Neville once came in here with like the Premier League trophy and probably Cadbury's or someone bringing him over as a sponsor, right? And like I was co-hosting the show at the time with my best mate Dermot, and he was slagging me, you know, on the run up going, oh, you're going to lose your... I was like, I'm not. I don't care if I meet Gary Neville or David Beckham or whoever. I'm totally cool. He walked in, like Dermot said hello to him completely normally. And then I looked at him and I literally, like that kid in Oliver, I went, hello, sir. And I called him sir to his face for no reason. Oh my God. And he looked at me and he was like, what are you calling me sir for? And I was like, I don't know. Hello. I was the exact opposite of you with Steven Gerrard.
A little bit like when you panic and call the PE teacher dad.
Yeah. It was exactly what it was. Oh God.
I've had a few like that, you know, like over the years. It's always the people like, you know, I've sat on a couch on Graham Norton with Nicole Kidman and like it hasn't fazed me. Whereas like I met Norman Lovett from Red Dwarf while I was on... doing stand-up, and my brain went to crap. I was like, don't mention Red Dwarf, don't mention Red. And he came over, he went, hello, Chris, nice to meet you. I went, my favourite episode's from series 2.
It's so hard sometimes. This stuff means so much to us.
It does. I was in Salford the other day doing a thing for Radio 4, and Craig Charles walked past in the foyer. Because I know him from a couple of things now, and he walked past me, Chris, it's Craig, how you doing? I was oh, I'm good, Craig, mate. And he walked away, and I was, even now I go, I can't believe Lister knows who I am.
Wonderful. Hopefully we'll never lose that, Chris. In fairness, we've still got people that still make us feel like this. Who knows? Come here. A lot of people will feel that way about you, Chris McCausland. You've got a new stand-up show coming to the wonderful venue of Vicar Street in Dublin on the 2nd of May. It's called Yonks. What's this one about?
Well, this is a return to Vicar Street. I came there towards the end of last year, and what a wonderful venue it is for stand up. You know, there's a few venues on, you know, along the way that you want to tick off as saying you played, And Vicar Street is just renowned for comedy, you know. Yeah. So it was lovely to play there. And so I'm returning to the venue, but the show, I'm going to be on, it's about nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Brilliant.
No one's learning anything. There's no theme. There's no underpinning narrative story arc. It's about Arnold Schwarzenegger and turnips. And so if people want to come out and have a laugh for a couple of hours, you know, there's 25 minutes on an invasive medical investigation I had to have as a 48-year-old man. So there's
these are all the things we need in our life, Chris. This is wonderful.
Yeah. But it's literally, you know, like I grew up watching stand up in the 90s, really late 80s through the 90s. And all them videos you used to get, you know, they weren't about anything.
No, they were just jokes.
Just an hour of stand-up, an hour 20 of stand-up. And like, no one ever walked away, you know. I mean, I suppose the closest you would have got through it in the 90s was, like, Eddie Izzard would have kind
right,
of
yeah.
subtly disguised the show as being about the beginning of time or something. But, like, they were just random nonsense. And that's the kind of – I think, you know, the Edinburgh Fringe and a lot of these kind of festivals – They do a lot for comedy in terms of giving you, like, comedians a shop window and something to aim for and something to kind of like a target to write a show and get out there and do it. But they also kind of push comedians into feeling that they've got to do things.
Themes and make things.
That make them stand out against the crowd. Whereas, you know, the comedy I grew up with was just nonsense.
But also, I mean, ultimately what people are going for, if it's a stand-up comedy show, is to laugh. And so as long as, you know, your main focus is achieving that, then I think, yeah, you can do all the other dressing up and standing out and all those things, but ultimately you have to do the comedy.
And I think as well is that, I mean, I feel very lucky now that, like, I'm kind of, you know, appealing to people who've seen me on things. So I'm not, I have been in the past in a position where you've kind of got to create a reason for people to come and see
you.
Gotcha. Whereas now, I suppose you can kind of go, well, come and see me if you like me on these things.
On these things, yeah.
And then it's just funny, isn't it? You haven't got to go, do you know what? It's a 2-hour exploration of the ancestry of
frogs.
European and frogs in the...
Which, in fairness, I think I might attend. I've got comedian Chris McCausland with me. You'll know him from so many things, including winning Strictly Come Dancing. Chris, what was that experience like?
Well, you know, I don't like to talk about it, David.
How dare I ask you?
People come up to me in the street and they go, oh, you must be so sick of talking about it. I'm like, no. Don't. It was like literally the most bananas thing I'll ever do in my life.
Yeah, let's please talk about it. But like, I mean, look, as a blind person, you know, like getting up on stage, doing comedy, all those things that you do, acting, everything that you do, appearing on every panel show and TV show there is. But dancing, I mean, like it seems so
far out.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. And I said no to it several times,
right?
Because it seemed preposterous. what world are you? I understand that you want to like tick boxes and have a bit of diversity and push boundaries.
Yeah.
But this is my career. You're talking about here. This is. Who wants to go and watch a comedian they feel sorry for that they've just seen fly off a dance floor into a camera? So I said no a few times because I didn't know what it was they wanted me to do. You can't explain it. You can't.
No.
Well, it's a samba. Well, what's that? And how good does it have to be? And what does it involve? It's really hard to explain. And so it basically took a lot of them wearing me down. And then I just had to take the plunge. And it was so unknown and so terrifying. But the one thing we did is, like, me and Diane, I said to her, listen, this is either going to work and we're going to surprise people, or let's go out in a blaze of glory trying. Don't be dumbing this down, because if you dumb it down, there's no point me being on it. I said, and she went, brilliant, that's exactly what I was thinking. Okay, this first dance, she said, I'm going to do a cartwheel in the air. You're going to catch me leg in midair. Pull it. I said, hang on a minute.
Slow down, Diane.
Can we just dumb it down slightly?
Don't you dare dumb it down, but dumb it down a little bit, please. Yeah.
But no, she was on exactly the same page.
That's
she was
brilliant.
Like, well, we're either going to go out in week one looking like idiots, or this is going to like smack people in the face.
And it did, because like, honestly, like, you know, it was so impressive between yourself and Diane. Like, Because and it wasn't, as you said, you don't want to be the comedian that people pity because you flew off into a camera or whatever.
Yeah,
but there wasn't any pity watch in it at all. It was like, no, hang on. This is really, really good. Like,
yeah, I mean, the biggest compliments really is that people kept on saying to me that people forget that you're blind watching it.
Yeah.
You know, and we did a dance towards the end in the semi-final and we had a joke in it. It was a Charleston, which has got a bit of comedy in it. Mm. And we did this, the set was, we were in a hot air balloon and she was pointing at something in the distance and I had this telescope and I looked through it and banged it because it wasn't working. Yeah. And then handed it to her. And it was a joke that I couldn't see through the telescope. And people, I saw on social media people saying it was the third time watching it that I remember that he was blind and that was funny.
Oh,
that was the joke, you know.
Oh,
because,
that's good.
That's the biggest compliment you can get, really, isn't it?
That is, yeah.
I think often with disability, you know, making people forget is way more powerful than reminding them constantly.
I love that.
And it just normalizes it so much more, you know. So
yeah.
I think goals achieved in that regard.
Completely. And listen, also the acting, like I absolutely love that movie, Bad Tidings. That was one of the funniest Christmas movies I've seen in so long. It's like, it's something I watch now. Like I watched it again last year and made sure the family sat down and watched it again because it's so good.
So again, like they hired a stunt double for me for that, and I said no. I said no. I like, this has got to be me doing it because I don't want people to only see the back of my head doing it, being thrown across the room, or you know. Yeah. So they've got to see me face, otherwise, you know. And it's about showing as well that somebody blind can do things that you wouldn't think they could do just within the industry.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
not even
yeah.
on the screen.
Yeah.
So we did this scene, and they had me. They had me harnessed to the top of this roof. Mm. So they built a roof.
Yeah.
I said, listen, I'm falling off this roof. You can either strap me to the top of the house or build a roof. And they said, we've chatted to the insurance and we're going to build a roof.
Right.
So they built this roof and it was like 25 feet high.
Oh, wow.
They harnessed me to the top of it. And then I fell off it and kind of on my chest, slid all the way down this, forgetting that because it was Christmas, it was covered in Christmas lights. And I got to the bottom and my ribs were killing me. And I'd insisted on doing this myself. They went, Chris, you ready to go again? I was like, yes.
Yes. Can I please get some kind of protective Under Armour first? But otherwise, I'm ready to go.
Yeah,
oh, that's so good.
We did a scene there where Lee Mack, he kind of grabbed me and kicked me up the behind.
Oh, yeah, that's right,
the car,
yeah.
And I somersaulted into this car and we did it 12 times. The first time I landed on the gear stick in the middle and the handbrake, so they covered that in foam. But he did 12 times.
Are you sure that wasn't just Lee Mack loving the fact that he got the kick? I'll do it again. The lighting was wrong.
I think silently he's kind of going to the director. He's holding up three fingers. Three more times.
And listen, in doing a little bit of research about you to try and find things other than the fact that you like Liverpool, when I was doing the videos, I found, is it true, genuinely true, that you nearly went to MI5?
Years and years ago,
yeah.
So like it was about 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. When I was unemployed for a while after uni and kind of lost my sight completely and didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And I just applied for some mad things alongside the stuff I had my degree in, and MI5 was one of them. You can actually apply, but it was, to be a spy, which is, running agents, as they say.
You were literally going to be a full-on British spy.
I got down to 30 from 3,000 applicants,
oh
top 1%.
God. That's incredible.
A guy that can't even play I Spy.
It doesn't get better than that as a way to end an interview.
A guy that has to play I Hear with my little ear with his daughter.
I Hear with my little ear. Chris, it's been such a joy to catch up with you, man. I can't believe it's taken this long for me to get you on the show, but I'm glad you're here. Yonks is the live show, Vicar Street, May 2nd. Do not miss this. It's about absolutely nothing and medical procedures, but it's going to be really enjoyable. Chris, thank you so much, man.
Thank you very much for your time. Cheers, mate.
All right, see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dave Moore on Today FM.
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Just call 1-800-242-0100.